On Monday, regulators seized First Republic Bank, the third case of a failed American bank over the last couple months. Banking giant J.P. Morgan ended up with control of the bank's assets. Here's President Biden talking about the response.
I'm pleased to say that the regulators have taken action to facilitate the sale of First Republic Bank and ensure that all depositors are protected and the taxpayers are not on the hook. These actions are going to make sure that the banking system is safe and sound, and that includes protecting small businesses across the country who need to make payroll for workers and their small businesses. And so let me be very clear. While depositors are being protected, shareholders are losing their investments. And critically, taxpayers are not the ones that are on the hook, as I said earlier. Now, going forward, I've called on Congress to give regulators the tools to hold bank executives accountable, and I've called on regulators to strengthen regulations and supervision of large and regional banks.
Our next guest will help us understand what happened to the bank and what, if anything, it means for bank customers around the country. J. Michael Collins is professor of public affairs and human ecology, where he's the Fetzer Family Chair in Consumer and Personal Finance. He's also faculty director of the UW-Madison Center for Financial Security. Michael, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, these are some significant bank failures here, but for everyday consumers who use banks for savings and mortgages and, you know, banking stuff, how much impact are people likely to see?
You know, I think that at the end of the day, not much, which is partly we just heard in the quote from the president. You know, the regulatory system is kicked in. They've done what they need to do. Depositors are protected. And, you know, for most of us, we probably weren't at risk anyway, because we didn't have these high deposits that exceeded the amount that's covered by the FDIC. So for most of it, you know, it's really not a big effect.
Yeah. Contrast this with 2008 a little bit, where it seemed like there was a problem with banking, period. Whereas this time, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like there's a problem with some banks.
Yeah. I mean, the quote "this time is different" is always a, you know, a curse, I think, whenever we talk about financial issues. But, you know, in 2008, we had a decline in house prices pretty much every place in the country and even globally. And a lot of financial institutions had made these long-term loans on these properties that had lost value. And that fundamentally is why they were, you know, were in a position where they couldn't financially be stable. That is not the case today. We're not seeing a decline in house values or the loan collateral. It's pretty simple. They deposits simply couldn't meet the needs of depositors who wanted to take their money out, and they want to take their money out because they were looking for better interest rates somewhere else. So as interest rates rose, depositors took their money out, and that left these banks. There's three big ones you just mentioned. They just didn't have enough cash to make those needs. And so as a result, these runs on the bank resulted in their seizure by the FDIC.
Now, sometimes I think there's a psychological element here, Michael. A run on a bank doesn't happen unless a run on a bank happens, right? The perception that maybe there's a kind of bank, a category of bank that is susceptible to these kind of problems. Is there a worry that a confidence in other banks might put them at risk, even if they're not particularly risky at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly something we're seeing discussed in the media. You know, which bank is next? How is this going to, you know, percolate, or how is this going to spread to other places? I think it is important to know that these institutions were really quite different. Silicon Valley Bank had a lot of large corporate balances, a lot of Silicon Valley companies that had, you know, $50, $60, $100 million in their deposits for things like payroll. And they had a chance to get a better interest rate somewhere else. So they moved their money out. And once that happened, they were in trouble pretty quick. Most of us are in financial institutions, banks or credit unions with, you know, hundreds of thousands of depositors with relatively small balances. So, you know, even if a few of us leave, it's not that big a deal. First Republic did have a lot of individuals, but they were high net worth individuals who had very large balances, and they were really sensitive to interest rates. So they went looking for the best interest rate. Meanwhile, First Republic made a lot of long-term mortgages and other loans at very low interest rates. So they had to pay out more for depositors than they could collect in interest. And so it became pretty quickly a problem. So those were two very unusual institutions, and I don't think we have a lot of others that follow that same model.
Now, we heard President Biden there mention looking at tougher regulation, maybe new laws passing Congress. Are there regulations you could see or regulation enforcements you could see that might have headed off the risk at these banks before it was too late for them?
You know, we'll obviously be trying to figure out what happened here for a while. It is true that the regulators were watching these institutions. They, you know, regulators are always looking over financial institutions every quarter of what their, you know, assets and liabilities look like. I think this happened really quickly. And so part of what, you know, part of the regulatory response maybe is that the regulators should have moved more quickly, that the speed of, you know, the runs actually was much faster than the regulators anticipated. So there might be some space there. There's discussions of changing how the insurance, the deposit insurance works. I don't know if we'll get much traction on that or not, but certainly it is something that needs to be relooked at. And perhaps we need to think about different forms of insurance for different kinds of depositors.
Talking to J. Michael Collins with UW-Madison's Center for Financial Security, also professor at UW, looking at a decent-sized bank getting shut down, bought up ultimately by another even bigger bank, and what it means, if anything, for you. You have thoughts, Michael, on, you know, how people make the decision of, hey, where should I do my banking? What kind of things, you know, with this news in the background, what's on your mind?
You know, it's important to realize that we've been, you know, many of us have had a decade or more, a longer, of really low interest rates. And so we weren't really accustomed to getting much return on our savings accounts. We kind of took it for granted that it was going to be close to zero. And now there's, you know, growing demand for your deposits. And, you know, we're seeing, whether it's internet banks or other kinds of institutions that are trying to get you to move your money over to chase the highest interest rate. And, you know, certainly there's some reason to do that. It's, you know, you might earn a little bit more interest, but it's also, you know, it's something you have to make good choices about. You have to do some investigation about where you're moving money to. Is that really going to provide you the kinds of return that you want? Will you be able to get the money if you need it? And ultimately, where do you want to bank? Do you want your money to be at some, you know, out-of-state institution, or do you want to keep your money local where it can go to make local loans and serve the credit needs of a local community?
We've mentioned interest rates a couple times. Want to check in on that now. It was part of the problem for the three banks we're talking about. We saw the Federal Reserve nudge those rates up again today. And they're saying, well, okay, now we're going to look at maybe we're going to stop bringing them up and watch at the impact they have on inflation, the banking industry, and more. What are your thoughts on this very much predicted decision by the Fed today?
Yeah, I think the Fed has really been trying to get inflation under control. They've been trying to, you know, slow down the economy and slow down the rise in prices. And so the impact of that on financial institutions has not been a predominant factor in all that. This has really been a historic change. Like, we've gone from, you know, basically 0 to 60 in some of the fastest time of interest rates that we've seen in a long time. And so that could have some knockoff effects, not just on financial institutions, but generally investments. It does look like they're going to start moderating. They're sort of signaling they're going to start moderating. But the question now is, how quickly do those interest rates go back to sort of quote unquote normal levels, whatever that might look like? And it's probably never going to get to the point where it was during, you know, we had a point in time where interest rates were effectively zero. I think that was not something that we should think we're going to go back to anytime soon.
Let's bring on a caller. Chris is with us in Fairchild. Chris, hello.
Hi. So two questions here, and I'll get off and let the guest answer. First one is, how does this shape the valuation of the U.S. dollar abroad? And your thoughts, perhaps, on how this affects foreign investment into the United States.
Chris, thanks for the call. Now, Michael, the dollar's been really high, very strong lately. I don't know, is the world watching concerns about banks here, and that could end up bringing the value of the dollar down some?
Yeah, I mean, the dollar has been quite high, and I think was probably due for some reset at some point in time. But it's all connected. I mean, the rise in interest rates that we're seeing in the U.S. is happening in other places as well. And so, you know, that's one of those knockoff effects I was just talking about. It's not just banks. It really is across different kinds of investments, bonds, equities, whatever else. And so in some ways, what the dollar is doing is responding in the same kind of way. I don't think what we're really seeing is driven by the failure of these three banks per se. I think it's generally a reset and sort of the valuation of the dollar, which, you know, I think some analysts would say was maybe a little higher than it should have been anyway.
Right. I'm looking at the chart. It has gone down a little bit since all this happened. But yeah, still pretty high, it looks like, out of my eyeballing of this chart. Chris, thanks a lot for that call. Michael, I want to touch on an issue that I know is close to your heart. Banking for the underbanked, people lower income often who have trouble accessing financial services, or at least financial services they can afford. What are you watching for in that these days?
Yeah, I think we've seen an increase in the rate of people who have bank accounts nationally over the last decade. And some of that is due to some technological innovations, things like quote-unquote fintech, where you could now have a bank account on your phone effectively or on a card. And that makes low-cost banking a little bit more accessible to more people. You know, we also have to be aware of the fact that when we put our deposits into a bank or credit union, those deposits are used to make loans. And so, you know, there is this potential that, you know, local financial institutions lose some of those deposits that then they can go to make the, you know, small business loans or the home mortgage loans that we might want in our community. So on the one hand, we're serving more and more people. We might be taking away some of the sources of capital that are needed in communities. So it's a sort of a double-edged sword. We'd like to see more financial access, but we'd also like to make sure that we have credit access for those who need it as well.
Michael, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
That's J. Michael Collins, professor of public affairs and human ecology at UW-Madison. We talked to him today about the third collapse of a decent-sized bank and its seizure by regulators earlier this week.